The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. That noise comes from the very birthplace. Not birthplace, let me correct myself. It comes from the burial chamber, if you will. The tomb, the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. It's the place that has been newly renovated. I think last year or the year before they redid this edicule. And a big event happens on this coming Saturday. It's known as the Holy Fire, and the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem is going to enter this chamber where Jesus' tomb is located. It'll be completely dark. And this is a bizarre phenomenon. I don't know how to explain it. I talk about it every year. In fact, in a minute, Father Simon's going to be joining me. He's doing double duty today. I hate to keep him over, but he graciously said he would. Father Simon and I talk about this every year. This Greek Orthodox patriarch goes in. He brings with him a bunch of candles, 33 of them to be exact. And he says certain prayers while the Armenian and the Coptic patriarchs, they wait outside the tomb. And from where the place where Jesus lay, he says, an unearthly light emanates. It's almost like a blue light, they say. It's a dim blue light. It'll begin to emanate from the tomb, and then it transforms. It turns into a fire, and it lights the candles that he is carrying. I know you find it hard to believe, right? Yeah, sure, Drew. I'm serious. They actually have video footage of this. Pretty amazing. He brings them out, and he goes there, and the light quickly spreads throughout everyone that's there. There's a connection there. You see what we do as Catholics on our Easter Vigil. It's called the Miracle of the Holy Father. It's been going in every year now for centuries on end. And there are some aspects of it that make you wonder about it. And here to help us better understand this, maybe the split that we have and, what this says about the resurrection or even the death of our Lord is Father Richard Simon. You just heard him for the past hour. Father, thank you for doing double duty with us. Always good to tap into your intelligence.
To tap into
and
my
your expertise. and your
like
humor.
Like you would a maple tree when you want some syrup.
Let me tap you.
Yes.
That's
awesome.
Oh, dear.
This
is bizarre. Every year you and I talk about it. I appreciate it because you have such an openness to this type of phenomena. God can do anything. He can turn bread and wine, of course, through transubstantiation to his true presence. So why not this? But maybe explain it. I give you a thumbnail, kind of a broad brush of what goes on. Give us some history or some background, if you would.
Well, it is interesting because people regularly talk about what a fraud it is. And there are people who, I talked to somebody and he said that, no, that it's a fake and all that. But it's been reported in one way or another since, around 328, in his life of Constantine, Eusebius of Caesarea says that in 162, the church wardens were about to fill lamps, and they noticed that they'd run out of oil, and so the Bishop of Jerusalem, Narcissus, this was before there was a Church of the Holy Sepulchre. He said, well, fill the oil lamps with water, and we'll see what happens. And in front of the eyes of everyone, every single lamp burned as if it were filled with oil. And then the first reference to the holy fire itself coming out of the tomb of Christ is in 385, and then it's mentioned again by Bernard the Wise, who was a pilgrim in 876. And it's been going on. If it's a fraud, it's a pretty consistent one for a very long time. And one of the reasons I think it isn't a fraud, there might be some fraud and some non-fraud, but I have met people who have participated in it who were very innocent of any kind of fraud. Well, the one that I found most interesting was an Israeli girl who I was talking to her. She was a guest in a home here in this neighborhood. And she said, I went to that holy fire ceremony. It's very strange because all the candles around me started lighting up. I thought people must have lighters or something. And I've talked to a number of people to whom that has happened, that their candle, it doesn't just happen in the Holy Sepulchre. It happens throughout the church, that the lights light up. And there is one marvelous video. I can never quite find it. It takes me ages to find it on YouTube. of a ball of fire shooting out of the tomb of Christ, and nobody seems to see it. It shoots through the crowd and then goes out. And you can see in these videos this kind of weird blue light that begins to descend from the dome. It's just really weird. And my point in it is, well, maybe there's some people whose candles don't light and they light them. That would be fraud. But it seems that there's something really that goes on. And, you know,
And why not, right?
Why not? Exactly.
I've seen food multiply. I've seen statues weep tears.
Sure.
I mean, I've seen things that defy science and explanation. So why not? Well, what does it mean? I mean, it raises a question for me. And the question that it sometimes raises is, okay, we know we have the split and we celebrate Easter and the Passion of our Lord at a little bit of a different time. So the event is supposed to take place on every Holy Saturday. And what a significant event this is.
Yeah.
But which Holy Saturday does it
happen? Which Holy Saturday?
Right. The one we Catholics mark or the one the Orthodox mark?
Well, you know, very interestingly, there is a reference to the holy fire mentioned by Pope Urban. Which Pope Urban? The Pope Urban of the Crusades.
Oh, wow.
Of the First Crusade. Was that Urban the Second? Which I can get my Urbans confused.
Awesome.
At the Council of Clermont, very interestingly, Pope Urban said that you got to realize that. Oh dear! A little background for people who don't know.
You
mentioned the edicule or the ediculum, which is the little building.
Right.
If you go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you will have no idea what you're looking at unless you've really studied it. And there's some wonderful videos on YouTube that show the history of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And Jesus was crucified. Essentially in a quarry at one of the main gates of Jerusalem. And everybody talks about the hill far away, and it wasn't a hill far away, it was a quarry downtown. And in the far end of the quarry, there were tombs dug. And then this was completely covered over about the year 135 AD by the Roman emperor who had finally conquered and destroyed Jerusalem. The tomb and Calvary were obliterated by him, covered. He built a plaza over them. And when Constantine the Great in 325 AD sent his mother to find the shrines associated with the life of Jesus, the Bishop of Jerusalem said, "Dig here. We've always known it's here. There it is." And they found the tomb and the rock of Calvary. And Constantine, being a great builder, decided he wanted to make a great church, a great basilica. And so he carved away everything that wasn't the tomb and wasn't Calvary. And we wouldn't have done that. We want to keep it just the way it was. Oh, no, they improved the whole thing. So he left the cube of rock in which Christ had been buried. And they built a little building around it and then a big dome around that. And a golden dome. It was considered one of the most beautiful buildings in the world. Then Caliph Hakim, whose friends called him Hakim the Crazy, decided to destroy every church in the Holy Land, and they hacked to bits the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Luckily, the dome fell in on the tomb, and the tomb is mostly still there. And it's very interesting that the National Geographic, about 5 or 6 years ago, volunteered along with some Greek archaeologists and the king of Jordan. They all came together and they decided to shore up this building, this little chapel-sized building in which the remnant of the tomb of Christ is, and they found it still there, that Hakim the Crazy had not been able to destroy much of it. But the cool thing is, and I tell that whole story because the cool thing is that when they put their instruments on the actual limestone burial bed of this tomb, they all went haywire.
Wow. That's absolutely.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They all went haywire, that they couldn't measure, that there's some residual energy there.
Yeah.
And so, okay, I wasn't surprised by that. You're not surprised by that. And this whole thing about You know, things like the Shroud of Turin or the Holy Fire. Now, you know, well, why doesn't it happen on the right Easter? Well, that back to the Council of Clement, Clermont, Pope Urban said, not only do we have the slab on which the body of Christ was laid, but we have the Holy Fire. You see, Hakim had destroyed the church to stop the Holy Fire. Wow. Because it was still keeping Jerusalem Christian. And so this does belong to the Latin Rite as well as to the Orthodox. And I think that the Lord has conceded it to the Orthodox because they have been through so much. That's my theory.
I love it. Yeah, you're right about that, the phenomena, too, just at the very birthplace of Christ. How do we know that's his burial place? But you're right, during that conservation effort when they went into the Holy Sepulchre, according to the reports, and this was probably, what is this, 2016, 17 when they did this? Yeah. It was several years ago. I was always struck by the fact that there was this strong electromagnetic disturbances when when they placed their instruments on that stone slab where Christ's body rested, and scientists reported, you know, measuring devices. They said, oh, it either malfunctioned or it ceased to work, and they had the scent of, I don't know if it was a perfume or a rose, a floral smell. A lot of incredible phenomena took place there. So, you know, why is it hard to believe then the Holy Fire is going to take place? Fire, too, Father. I want to talk about fire. Fire is rich in the Old Testament. We know the fire of the Holy Spirit descends, those flames of tongues of fire upon the apostles. And we see it in many apparition sites, too. Fatima, the angel with the flaming sword, right? We have the great Peshtigo fire. God sometimes uses fire to chastise or to send his message. Put it into perspective. What is it about fire that the Lord communicates to us through this means, this imagery?
Well, just in terms of physics, I mean, you know, that we think of a spiritual world and a physical world, and they're not separate. You know, that there may be, maybe we can think of them as different dimensions, that sort of thing, but they're not separate. That energy and matter are interchangeable. And, you know, I am just utterly intrigued by the latest research on the Shroud of Turin, that the marks on the Shroud of Turin seem only able to be made by an instantaneous burst of light, less than, what is it, 1/400,000th of a second long?
Amazing.
You know, that these are not scorch marks. They are light burns that are instantaneous, and they're only on the surface of the cloth. And, you know, I don't know if you saw that movie Risen, but they portrayed, isn't it a great movie?
Yeah.
They portrayed the resurrection as an explosion of light. You know, that energy
cool.
and matter are, in a sense, I mean, interchangeable. And fire is kind of an everyday release of energy from the breakdown of matter. And maybe I'm being a little too pseudoscientific, because I don't, you know, I can only count to 20 if my shoes are off. I don't know the first thing about math or science. But it is utterly intriguing to me that we want to see the world in these certain categories, and it doesn't work, you know, we're spiritual beings that are incarnate. You know, we're not souls trapped in flesh. We're incarnate spirits, and you know that the Lord is Lord of the whole schmear, not just the spiritual stuff. So I don't know. Those are some of my thoughts about fire and light.
No, I love it. I think of the fire in the Old Testament with Saint Charbel Maloof. A whole lot of different situations there. Maybe for those who don't understand, they're saying, well, you know, why is Easter celebrated differently? The split. Do you want to give a little history on that?
Oh.
Do you think that? I mean, I believe one day we'll be unified, but John Paul wanted that. I know Benedict worked for that. So, you know, it was, what, 1058 when we had this great split? I don't know. Somewhere in that range.
1054.
Right?
I don't. Was that? Or was that the invasion of England? Hold on. Okay. You hear my computer clicking away. Great.
We're close. We're within 4 years. We're within 48 months, Father.
1054. You were right.
No, you were right. There you go.
There
That's
we
great.
Go. 1054. The, you know, that, you know, Rome was the center of the world, and there were three patriarchal cities. And the way I heard it is they were all associated with the ministry of St. Peter. The church was established, was organized by St. Peter in Antioch, in Alexandria through his assistant, friend, and disciple, St. Mark, and then in Rome by Peter himself. So those are the three Petrine sees, and one in Africa, one in Asia, one in Europe. And that's it. Those were the three patriarchates. And because Peter and Paul had died in Rome and their relics were buried there, and we read in St. Irenaeus of Lyon about 180 AD that all churches must agree with Rome, St. Ignatius of Antioch says Rome preeminent in love. And so the very earliest days of the church, Rome had a preeminence in among the episcopates. And, well, Rome was, you know, all roads led to Rome until about 400 AD. And then Rome hit the skids, and it eventually became a town of maybe 10, 20,000 people with a lot of malaria. Meanwhile, Constantinople had become the new Rome, and the empress thought, well, it's the new Rome. Why shouldn't the new papacy be there? And nope, the papacy was established here, and we're staying here. And so Constantinople grew to a city of maybe 500,000 people, whereas Rome faded away. And so the political and cultural and just the preponderance of influence moved to Constantinople. And this was a great kind of feud. And it's not something that we should be proud of. And the popes in the West in the Renaissance fixed the calendar. The calendar had gotten behind, but they didn't do that in the East. And so our celebration of the date of Easter went off sync, and it can get very off sync now because you determine it by the first full moon after the vernal equinox, and when does that happen, and what the date after it gets. I can't figure it out to save my soul, but that's a big part of it, was that the papacy advanced the calendar because the calendar got out of sync, and the East said, no, that's just a papal trick. Don't pay any attention. And, wow. You know, it's not something we can be proud of, but I think the Lord has out of his love for people who have kept the faith in difficult circumstances for many centuries, has granted them that miracle as a strengthening for them.
I love it. That's awesome. I really do. Hey, Father, always good to have you here. I appreciate you.
Oh, it's fun.
You're
it's
joining
fun.
Us, and I'm so grateful for all that you do before us here. Let me grab a call for you, and then I'll let you go. I know you want to get on with your weekend, too, but we'll go to Mary Ann listening in Illinois.
I remember last time
you were on, we had somebody who actually witnessed as they called in.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Ann, good afternoon. You're on the air with Father Simon and Drew. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew and Father Simon. I just wanted to mention the thin blue light that you're talking about and the fiery flames, just what you look at when you're looking at the image of divine mercy.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
The rays that pour forth from the heart. I love it. Marianne, thank you. I appreciate the call. It's great to have you.
I think we should be thinking about our salvation.
Amen to that. Amen.
Yeah, I think about it more and more as I get older and older.
Every day, right?
Yeah, amen. One more little cool factoid. On the Shroud of Turin, it's covered with limestone dust.
Yeah.
And limestone dust has a very specific signature, different elements in it. And the stone in that part of Jerusalem is the only place in the world where you find that exact limestone dust that's all over the shroud. Wow. I think that's cool. But go on.
I love it. There's an interesting connection between the Shroud of Turin and the image of divine mercy, too. So, I really believe that's a gift from heaven, just as the shroud is and the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, divine mercy is as well. And I just love that when we see this phenomenon. We live in an age today, Father, where, people don't believe. Science has an answer for everything. And when you see something that defies the laws of physics or, points to God, people have a real problem with it. But I think it pricks the conscience and the heart and makes people think. And hopefully this Holy Saturday will do that. So I only have some final thoughts from you.
Yes. Well, I just think, the idea that these defy the laws of physics, I almost think the opposite. They profoundly demonstrate the laws of physics. I mean, the idea of matter and energy intrigues me. I love what Father Spitzer does with physics and science and religion. You can get his stuff on YouTube. You can get it through his organization, Magis. It's wonderful stuff. But I think that these miracles demonstrate the profound relationship between faith and science. And it's people who know little science that deny faith. People who are really great scientists usually don't.
That's so true. And the more that you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And it really does point to God. Father, thank you. Enjoy your weekend. All right?
Thank you.
Always a delight having you. I really enjoy having
you
here.
It's fun. I look forward to seeing you at the new center. Oh, and by the way, at 3:30, you're doing consecration to St. Joseph, right?
That's right. Yeah.
You're going to
join us for that?
Well, I will join you distantly. I have an appointment, but I will be listening.
Yeah, we're going to do that. So, it's a great reminder. I'll fill everyone in. Hey, God bless you, Padre.
All right. God bless. Talk to you later, Drew.
Father Richard Simon, one of my favorites. Love him. And again, he was just on the air for an hour and hung out to spend some time with both of us. He's right. 3:30 today, Father Rocky will be leading us. You and I hope you'll participate. This is a year that the Pope himself has declared and dedicated to St. Joseph. And every year, Relevant Radio does a renewal. We do a consecration to St. Joseph the Worker, because St. Joseph has been instrumental in bringing about our growth and his intercession, as Brother Andre so often saw, has been powerful. His providence has just been off the charts. And we will be doing our annual renewal of consecration to St. Joseph the Worker. I invite you to do this with us. And Father Rocky will lead us for in about an hour from now. And feel free to join us in this extraordinary grace-filled opportunity. So we'll pray the chaplet, and then we will follow that with this particular consecration. When that is over, Kent Starr is going to be stopping by. Many of you may be familiar with Whitewater or the Clinton administration, and he was the U.S. Solicitor General. He just wrote a new book that has come out, and he's talking about really the religious liberty threats that face us today. His title of his book is Religious Liberty in Crisis, Exercising Your Faith in an Age of Uncertainty. And it's an eye-opener for all of us. So we'll do that. We'll also talk more about St. Joseph a little bit later. So feel free to join me anytime. I'm going to take a short pause. When I return, the great Peter Grandage is going to be stopping by. We'll take a look at all things economic, and then we'll pray. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Good guys and women on Wall Street, but Wall Street didn't build this country. The middle class built the country, and unions built the middle class. Let's raise the minimum wage to $15. No one working 40 hours a week. No one working 40 hours a week should live below the poverty line.
Your life, your money, connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Money!
Yeah, that, of course, was the President of the United States. He unveiled the $1.8 trillion American Families Plan during his first address to Congress. Everything sounds great, right? I mean, if there was unlimited money and you didn't have to worry about where it came from, yeah, let's do it, right? You know, Franklin D. Roosevelt created the modern government-funded social safety net back in the 1930s to aid lower and middle-income income families. And it was paid for in part by raising tax on the richest Americans. Of course, Eisenhower, he built the interstate highway system in the 50s, and Kennedy, he defined the federal industrial policy in the 60s by pledging to put a man on the moon by decade's end. But in his first 100 days, President Joe Biden, he's been attempting, I think, to emulate all three. He's seeking to combine and update for the 21st century his predecessor's vision for a muscular Washington's role in the economy. But look, we're talking trillions of dollars. I heard somebody this morning, I was watching, I don't know what program it was. They said the amount of money that we're spending is more than we spent on all of the wars combined, you know, more than the revolution, the Civil War, World War I, World War II. I mean, you name these different wars. I mean, a lot of money going on right now. So you got $1.8 trillion American Family Plan. He unveiled that Wednesday following his already $2.3 trillion American Jobs Plan and his $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. Right, so what's he proposing? Some quick math here, about $6 trillion in new federal spending over the next 10 years. Ouch. That's got to hurt. It has to hurt. It's far more than any president, at a comparable point in their terms. And What does it mean? It means we're going to expand the size and the scope of government. I'm not a big fan of big government personally. I'm not. I'm a fan of subsidiarity. You know, Biden's programs aim to redistribute trillions of dollars from the highest earning households and businesses to everyone making less. And he's going to do it in a number of ways. So he's going to undo a portion of Donald Trump's tax cuts and a whole litany of other things. But, you know, the big thing is we can get into the minutiae of this. That's not what I'm here to talk about. I want to talk about what this means for your future. What's it mean for the future of the country? How do we stay competitive in a global economy? What's it mean for the future of America and, more importantly, for your children? It's an important question, and I'm joined today by none other than Peter Grandage. You know him. I hope you love him. I always enjoy my conversations with him. He's been around the financial markets since 1984, and he wrote a great book called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. Speaks of his humility there. It's now in its fourth edition. You can find out more if you want to go and read it. It's free, believe it or not. RelevantRadio.com/Peter. That's RelevantRadio.com/Peter. Of course, check him out at PeterGrandage.com. Tap into his expertise. He's a great supporter of the network here, too. Hey, Peter, thanks for being here. It's always good to talk with you.
Same here, Drew. Always a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
So much to talk about. I don't even know where to begin. I said to you off air, what do you want to talk about today? You know, and then I heard Jake run the audio, and I'm like, all right, we can talk Biden. We can talk the Green Bay Packers. We can talk anything you want to talk about right now. So your sense, though, well, maybe I should be serious. I know you and I were talking about Aaron Rodgers in the back, and maybe we can get to some sports. I know you were a chaplain and did a lot of stuff for the Giants there. But in terms of where we are economically in the country and what the president is proposing, you're a guy who's said to me, Drew, debt is bad. You know, you talk about scripture, you talk about all the storage facilities that people have today, and then I look at the debt that the president is getting this country into. Give me your big picture view, if you could, Peter, on how you see this unfolding over the course of the next 10 years and what it means for the country.
Well, as you know, that I gave up pronosticating because when I truly came to Christ through my Catholic faith, I realized the only person that truly knows the future is God. So I can make a good educated guess, but that's all it is, Drew, is a guess. So you and I have talked for a while. We have, during our time that we've talked, if you think about it, the government's debt was substantially below $20 trillion, now is approaching $30 trillion, not counting what is now being proposed, as you said, in Biden's most recent speech. So the first thing I start with is this comes to mind, and I hope you don't mind me saying.
No, go ahead.
The biggest lie out there is, hi, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. I mean, it's just big government has failed every time we've tried it. Sure, you mentioned some great programs that went along, but what people forget is when we did those programs, we were the world's largest creditor nation.
Yep.
Now we have $30 trillion of hard debt. And I always remind you, and the public doesn't even grasp this, and most of the people in the financial world don't grasp it, that doesn't take into account what people's expectations are to pay off in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And we could argue that that's another $50 to $70 trillion. But let's just look at the hard debt. 2019 was one of the better years we've had in the modern era. We took in about $3.5 trillion in revenue. That's what the government lives off of. It takes in taxes and stuff, and then it hopefully distributes its right and takes care of its people. We had about $440 billion in interest payments in that year, okay, which is about 12 to 14% of revenue. At $30 trillion, and with now inflation just ripping. I mean, the one of the biggest BS, sorry for using those initials, was Jay Powell saying that there's really no inflation. I mean, lumber, ask anybody that's in the building business, ask anybody everywhere you go in the food, ask anybody that's gone shopping. Your wife will probably tell you if you don't do the food shopping.
Yep.
What just in a year the difference in prices?
Yep.
So let's just say interest rates revert back, because we know they've been artificially kept low. Sooner or later, you can't keep doing that if inflation comes and puts out its head, and it's clear that it's here now, at least in my book and some other people's book. So let's just say interest rates go back to 5%. 5% was pretty good when I think about in 1980 when my wife and I went to look possibly for our first home, and the lady said, I can do real good and get you 15% mortgage.
Oh, my gosh.
So 5% isn't that bad, okay, when you think about what interest rates have been for those of us that have been around the block a couple times. Well, at 5%, just at 5% on $30 trillion, we'd be talking about a $1.5 trillion interest payment, and we're in the ballpark. It may not be exactly that. Or almost half of our entire revenue just to service our interest payments as a government. Yeah. We're not even talking about the principal payment back. So here's the problem I have, and why I wanted to tell you that to understand this. The can is getting almost impossible to keep being kicked further.
Wow.
We're going to get to the point where you just can't keep printing money. And that's what we're doing. That's all we're doing. We're not taking this from someplace that we had it saved in order to create these programs. Now, let's just go back to, you talked about Trump's tax cut. Do you remember this discussion with us, Drew? Remember I said he was gambling? Remember he said that while it would boost the deficit, his expectation was with the GDP growing 4%, the amount of more tax dollars that would come in would make up for that deficit. Well, he didn't get that chance. I mean, to give him a break, the pandemic came along, okay? But even without the pandemic, I have felt it was very, we never averaged something like this. So this is a country that has literally now, second generation now, that debt has become a way of life. And I always use, and you brought it up about the storage facilities. Our parents and grandparents has never had storage facilities. They lived in much smaller dwellings. They had much less stuff. And every medical study says they were no worse off than we were mentally. So the bottom line is the excess eventually gets to a level that it just can't be handled anymore. We're closer now than we've ever been before. Can it go another year? Yeah, maybe go 5 years. I don't know that. But I can tell you we're in far more of a dangerous position now than we were before. And here's the big problem, Drew, that isn't being spoken about. When we had past fiscal issues, even the most recent one in 2008, which was centered more in the mortgage real estate business, it wasn't across the board like everything now is up and way overpriced. We had some still political harmony. There was a chance that two people on different sides of the aisle could sit and work something out. I don't believe that's possible anymore, Drew. I believe political disharmony is at the worst level than since why we became our own country when we wanted to leave Britain. That's how much disharmony is in between parties, let alone how 50% or so of the people feel about one party and how wrong they are. So there are a whole host of things to be very concerned about. And lastly, Wall Street and Main Street have never been more distant.
Wow.
The perception and what is happening and how Wall Street is reacting to things, and the 1 or 10% of the population that greatly benefit from that versus the 90% of people who have, pandemic or not, who for several years have at best held their own and many have slipped back and then the pandemic added greatly to that slippage, there's never been this big of a spread. So somebody's got it wrong. Wall Street may have it right. Biden's plans, we live happily ever after and everything goes right. Or we make the problem even more spread to the point where the 90% pull the 10% back down. And, and that's where I would say my best guess is what ends up happening, Drew.
You know, it concerns me a little bit. I mean, we're seeing the influence of the progressive branch of the party, and they're all about bigger government and bigger spending. I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was yesterday, and I'll share this one line out of it. It said, the Biden economic program is rooted in a core belief that the American economy is now riddled with market failures that only Washington can fix. Problems more evident now than during President Barack Obama's term. As Mr. Biden reviewed a history of major scientific breakthroughs of the 20th century, he said these were investments that only government was in a position to make. Is there merit to that? Is there any truth? He sees the government, not business, as as the driver for the future of this country and for our economy.
I would give that some validity if there was harmony within the parties okay? I don't see that at all. I really don't. I also look at, we can even look at our own Catholic Church. If it wasn't for the Catholic Church, so many, not only here but around the world, people would suffer far greater. Government has not been able to take care of even a majority of people. So I've never been a big believer in big government, and Reagan proved that. Reagan took big government out, and we had some of the best period of growth that we ever had. So, but we have an economic issue. We have a much bigger political issue, and of course the biggest of the three now is the social issue. But the issue that you won't hear people talk on Wall Street, which I do, which is greatly cut my business 80%. Okay,
wow.
So when I speak this, wow, just so you know, Drew, even though I'm on your network, where the most likely people what I'm about to say would actually appreciate it, but certainly not on a general financial network. The biggest problem now is there's a tremendous battle between good versus evil.
Yeah,
just like there's no middle class, there's no middle ground. Either there's a lessening percentage of people who believe that, for the most part, the Judeo-Christian ways that this country was built on and worked, like there were a lot of things wrong, but it was still the best by far for a couple hundred years. Much of that has been chipped away or taken away and clearly moving in the opposite direction. Now, the difficulty, people say, well, you know, it's the time has come, you know, and you got to make change. Well, in my Bible, you can tell me, Drew, maybe you have a different one, I didn't see any time periods. I didn't notice when I read a verse that it says this is only good to 2021, and then after that, you know, you're on your own. There is a disharmony coming, and to tell people to say that, they listen, one of the first things we got to do to get things back is we got to come back to Christ. A lot of people don't want to hear that now. You know, all the numbers of,
sure,
people not going to church and being religious and have you and all. But realistically, that is not only the biggest issue, but that's our best hope. It's certainly not going to be through political ways, how disarming we are now and how we've become socially. And, of course, technology is now demolishing a lot of what people used to count on, and, you know, one-to-one contact and all, and you can say something now so fast, and Twitter in a matter of minutes ruin lives. So there's a whole host of things that I don't think the average person or even the average financial person is taking into consideration long-term when you original question, where do you see things going? And they're only looking at all the positive possibilities. And I think one of the worst things that happens as a financial advisor for, you know, being around almost 40 years is some of us have been able to measure financial risk well, and we understand that and point that out to people, but very few in the financial business measure mental anguish, because they never have to suffer it. They do pretty well early on, and they don't have the ramifications if a client happens, you know, the market turns down and things change. And I think the market has gotten so caught up and so excited and literally now influenced by people with very limited experience that haven't been around the block, that one day this one-way street that they've learned to drive on and seem to be very comfortable in are going to come to a traffic circle and not know what they're going to do at that point. I don't know what date that's coming, but I know it's a matter of when, not if.
My guest today, Peter Granich. Peter, we have to take a short break. When we return, I only have him for a few moments this afternoon, so if you want to get in, I will open the phones. We will grab a couple calls. You can get in now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You might be saying, food is going up, lumber's going up, we're seeing the government expand and want to spend trillions of dollars. What's that mean for my future? Where should I invest? Where do we go? We'll talk about that and more. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I made it clear we can do it without increasing the deficit. Let's start with what I will not do. I will not impose any tax increase on people making less than $400,000.
They're already paying enough.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's so great to be back here with you. Thank you for joining me. We'll do our best to get you on the air if you're on hold. The number here is 888-914-9149. Talking with Peter Grandage. And as you heard him say a few minutes ago, he was talking about food costs going up. My wife and I had the same conversation. I was in Houston, Texas recently. I was visiting my daughter, and we went food shopping. We bought her some food, right? And we were really surprised at the difference in food costs where she lived versus where we live. And then I was reading, actually it was this morning, I believe, there was an article I came across talking about how lumber prices, to Mr. Grandage's point here, they rose 250% since April of 2020. You're talking 1 year, a 250% increase. I mean, they talked to somebody, I think from one of those big lumber distributors, I think 84 Lumber, one of those guys. And the guy says, look, we're not getting lumber in a timely manner. One, because of COVID, right? The mills can't keep up with the orders. And the other thing we've been talking about, a lot of people, they don't have enough workers to work the mills. You know, and of course, we had distribution problems with Canada where we get a lot of lumber from. But 250% increase, just to put that in perspective, you might say, well, what's that mean? One sheet of particle board, okay? One sheet of particle board used to cost around $10. You know how much that costs you now? $60. $60. So the, you know, for the average, they made the case that for the average, you know, single family home, if you were to build one right now, you'd have to, you know, dip into another $24,000. That's just the average. The bigger the house, the bigger that number. Peter, it's good to have you back. We'll grab some phone calls. Before we do that, I'm just curious. I know a lot of people are saying, well, I don't know what to do. I'm worried about big government. I'm worried about the markets. You know, what about gold? What about, I mean, do you have any sense of where people should maybe go financially right now in times that, you know, to me seem somewhat uncertain?
Well, I think we have to start with the manual of life, the Bible. You know, people don't recognize that whether I was on a secular show and just talk about it as an historical book or talk about it here on Relevant Radio as truly the, you know, part of the manual of life that God had given us, that there's so much spoken about. There's more matters about money than even about heaven and hell and praying. Oh, yeah. So, you know, if you haven't looked at it in a long time and you're concerned, maybe that's the first place to start. You know, half the parables are about that. Yeah. But I think what you'll get out of that also, and you know, this is an old record with me and you, and that is that there's not one positive verse in all of the Bible about debt. In fact, there's a tremendous amount of warnings about it. And this is a country and a society that has got hooked on debt, that we're willing. You know, I like to say that the difference between my parents and maybe my kids and if I have grandchildren is, yep, our parents used to ask themselves, can we afford it? Kids now ask, can we make the first payment?
Yeah, right.
And, you know me about public storage. I mean, we didn't have public storage 30, 40 years ago, certainly not in the way that we have it now. Right. We didn't have as big as dwellings to where we could keep stuff that we're now paying people to keep. And so it's a whole mindset, and that's, it goes back to what we talked about from the onset about less is more. One of the things that people picked up in the pandemic, Drew, they realized at least early on, as much as they want to get out now and spend money on vacations, they didn't need all the stuff that they thought they had. They realized, you know, being back in a family and seeing each other across from the dinner table, yeah, and not running out and all. So, you know, some good came out of that, but, you know, just as quickly as people, when we had 9/11, ran back to church and then soon stopped going to church, I think it all starts for us getting back into our faith in a powerful way, if we're not, and what does our faith in the church teach us about matters of finance and all that. And the last thing, and I urge your listeners, and start with Relevant Radio, the key to success is tithing. I know it's hard for people to believe that. They go, Peter, I can barely pay my rent. How do you expect me to tithe and all? Well, there's only one time in all of Scripture where God literally puts out a challenge in Malachi and says, trust me, challenges us to trust him by tithing to see the blessings that will come back tenfold. And everybody I know that used to say, well, I couldn't do it and all, goes and does it, sees blessings. Now, they're not always monetarily,
right,
but they're just blessings that you recognize that you're tithing. And one of the ways is, and it's going to be very critical, that the relevant radios of the world and the few places where steel, like a person like me, I couldn't speak like this on a general financial network. They would have cut me off
so
20
true.
Minutes ago.
So
it's important that relevant radio, and I know there's a lot of listeners out there that write to me and say they benefit what I say and all. Well, I'm calling you out today. I didn't discuss this with Drew. He had no idea. Now's the time to show your gratefulness by helping Relevant Radio and make sure they stay on, because I'm going to tell you, it's coming tougher and tougher to be a Catholic Christian in the world today.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think about you too, not just from finances. I think about LeBron James and a whole lot of those sports figures that you used to deal with. I know you invested a lot of their money. And you also were a chaplain there at the Giants, and you did some other things. Just what do you make of what's happening with these guys now in the world of sports and this whole social platform? I don't know what you did last night. I know the draft is underway for the NFL. Big news regarding Aaron Rodgers, perhaps not wanting to come back to Green Bay. You know, he's an MVP player. I mean, so much going on there. But your thoughts on that, Peter?
I'm going to give you my thoughts, and then I'm going to end with a question. So my thoughts are, as you know, for almost 20 years, part of my business was working with professional athletes. I also was very blessed to do the chapel and Bible study and fellowship with the New York Giants for 13 years. So last year, long story short, I closed that division, made a very tough financial decision. It cost a lot of income because what was happening with the BLM and how it was being tied into professional sports went contrary to my faith, and I had to make a decision. I couldn't wear on one arm this Catholic Christian guy that believes everything is built on our church and what we're taught, and then on the other arm, hang out in the sports world where they're in a sense going against everything that my faith supposedly teaches me. So it was a very costly thing. So last night I didn't watch the NFL draft like I would have each year, and thinking that that person may come a client or my agent may get that person or so forth. And it changed a lot. But now social views have just spread throughout sports to where a lot of players and of one particular skin color versus another are afraid to say anything because how their career could literally be over in a matter of minutes. And I think people went to sports to get away from all the things that go on day to day in life. Not only did we live our youth as we got older and by going to a football or a hockey or a baseball game, but we literally went there for a few hours not to be caught up in everything that's happening in the world. And that's been totally lost now. And to some extent, and to a fairly big extent, some of the professional sports have suffered from that. The biggest one, where it happens to be most socially prevalent, is basketball. They have seen tremendous drop in revenue and following and so forth. So the LeBron James in the world, who, you know, I always feel it's hypocritical for them to speak in one way and then they go home to a $20 million home on a private jet. You know, if you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk. But I've separated now, Drew, from sports. But I have still one burning question left.
I know it's coming.
That's never been answered.
Yeah.
And I asked Jake, and he said, I can do this. I need to know, because this could be my last time. You don't know what the Lord has planned for
me. That's true.
Are you a Packers fan or an Eagles fan?
Oh, boy, that is such a loaded question. Well, here's the truth, and I'll tell you my background. I had grown up as an Eagle fan. I mean, my entire life I rooted for the Eagles. It was my hometown team. As you know, you were Giants. You were in our division, and Eagles never could close the deal, you know, and my entire life they did nothing but disappoint. So I get relocated with Relevant Radio to Green Bay, and my buddies come out from Philly. We go to a Packer-Eagles game, and I didn't know who to vote for because I had been living here for a few times, and the people in the frozen tundra who Packers have such fidelity. I mean, people love their team here, and they're owned by the people, unlike Jeff Lurie owning the Eagles or some other individual owning the team. So I kind of sat there watching the game, enjoying both teams, not really caring. Well, I'll remember, Peter, a few years later, the Eagles, they weren't in contention right now. The Green Bay was playing Seattle. They had a two-score lead. They had 2 minutes to go. They were about to go to the Super Bowl. And Seattle, the Seahawks, came back. They got onside kicks. They kicked 54-yard field goals. They threw touchdown passes. When that game was over, I was so shell-shocked. I never felt so sick, and I thought, oh my gosh, what's the matter with me? I never felt this way a day in my life. You would have thought my wife died, right? I realized that day I was a Green Bay Packer fan. So, you know, now I give my East Coast friends and family a lot of a hard time, but a little disappointed in Aaron Rodgers, to be honest with you. You know, he's such a great player, and of course he made news nationwide by saying he didn't want to come back here. What do you know about that?
I don't know anything that anybody else doesn't know. I certainly know that he's never seemed to be the true there's no I in team guy. I mean, I think he wants to win in a big way. I think there's no question that you can see that in his eyes and the way he grasps in the game and all. Yeah. But I think he forgot that there's 52 other players on the team. And, you know, that's the world we get caught up in. And, you know, in sports, they're going to have to make a decision if he's adamant and all. And, you know, they did draft a guy. And, you have to realize that sooner or later things move on. You know, it was kind of like that for him, you know, with Brett Favre and all these type of things. So, but again, the tough thing for sports fans is to realize it's no longer a sport. It's all business. I've been on the inside. Yeah. You know, I've worked with the head of player developments for the Giants and Jets. They have to approach everything from a business standpoint, not a fan standpoint.
And here's the thing, too, Peter. I mean, first of all, I know that you're a Giant fan. You've probably been one your entire life, right? Is that the case? You've always been a Giant fan?
I started as a Jet fan, but my partner, who I would meet to Storm Trinity, was a former running back for the Giants. That's how I got to the Giants.
Hey, but you know, now that I am in, now that we broadcast nationwide, I mean, in Chicago, the McCaskey families have been great supporters of Relevant Radio. They're the owners of the Bears. It's hard to root against the Chicago Bears. You know, I think about my daughter in Houston, Texas. You know, you in New York. I mean, I got interest all over the country. But always good to talk to you. Football will be here before we know it, Peter. Keep up your good work, okay? And we'll catch up soon. And maybe I'll be back next week to talk tithing. I'd love to do that with you.
All right, Drew. Take care.
All right. That's Peter Grandage. Hey, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy is straight ahead. I need to take a short pause. We'll pray on the other side. All right? Stay with me. We'll be right back.